This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
So today I have with me...
Hi, I'm Lucas Dreyer.
And I am Diane McConnell. Now, Lucas, over the past few weeks, we've done a few recordings looking at your work in orokinetics, working with this clinical physiology. Take me back. To 1985?
Yeah, so my passion for this, or my exposure to this, started in 1985 when I did my honours degree. Initially I got involved because part of our training was we're going to work in the clinic and we're going to get paid for it. And as a student, I thought, okay, I'll do this, because I get some pocket money. And so I wasn't really convinced I wanted to do this. But once I started working with real clients, and you start seeing how desperate some people's situations are, and you realize in your conversations with these people that there's actually nobody else out there that can help them. The medical community, they do a wonderful work job dealing with end of disease stage, where people are there's a medical emergency or there's surgery that needs to be done, and that's where they focus. But when you think about prevention, the basic approach is here's a pill, and like I said in one of the previous recordings, the pill does not heal you. It just gives you an opportunity to do something about your situation. So this exposure to these clients, and as I start working with these real clients, I would go to town and walk through the shopping centers, and often my dad or my father-in-law or somebody were with me, and about half the people that we see, every third one we see, I knew by name, and they ask, how do you know all these people? I said, well, they're in our clinic, or they come through the clinic, and you don't realize how many people walk out there with medical issues. Aldous Huxley had a famous quote where he said, the progress of the medical science has been so effective that today there's hardly an individual that's not diseased. So he was...
lots of work for you.
I wouldn't say it's that bad, but there's more people than most people realize that have health issues. And a lot of those people just don't know how to help themselves. And so between Sonia and myself, starting in 85, working with real people, cardiac patients, people with lung issues, people with that had back surgeries or shoulder surgeries, or people that are at AC AC joint replacement surgery and knee replacement surgery. We become really passionate about this profession, just seeing the need out there, and also seeing the difference it makes in people. Your typical cardiac patient would come in basically too scared to move, because they're too scared that if they do something, it might trigger another heart attack.
I can understand that.
Yeah, and so and you can actually see when you start working with them that halfway through that first exercise session, how their body position changes on the cyclocommoder.
In what way does their body change?
The changes to head lift up, shoulders go back, and they start looking around, and you can see it in their eyes. They start thinking, wow, I can do this.
Magic.
And that's we actually wait for it. We often wait for it to see it happening, and it's very satisfactory to see that moment when they realize, I there's like a light in the tunnel, that I can do this.
Mm.
And so with people with musculoskeletal issues, those ones that come in with chronic pain, and just to then see how the pain gets better. In some cases, the pain doesn't actually disappear, especially if it's long-term chronic pain, but their ability to manage the pain become better. They know what to do when it flares up. They also, as they get stronger and fitter, they psychologically deal better with it. And that's important, because the next step from, if you're in a position where you're chronically uncomfortable, it attacks you psychologically.
Definitely.
Yeah. It impacts on your mental health. And so just doing something, and that something often increases the blood flow to those areas, and that helps with pain relief as well. And that's what we call the happy hormones. You secrete some hormones that make you, one of my colleagues said, you can't fight against your hormones. So in a jokingly way. But basically saying, if you exercise, you're going to feel better whether you like it or not. That's quite true. The big thing to learn is how to pitch that exercise. That you don't overdo it, and that you don't do stuff that actually makes the issue worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, if I take you back to 1985, what was happening in South Africa in this field of clinical physiologists? Because I take it nothing was happening in New Zealand.
Yeah.
So what was happening? Where was the training? What did you have to do to qualify?
Well, this basically started with the guy that's called the father of clinical exercise physiology in South Africa. He did a this was in the mid-1960s, 1970s maybe, late 60s, where he did his PhD on patients that had heart attacks.
And he was looking at the exercise aspect?
He was looking at the exercise aspect, and he actually approached some of the cardiologists to help him screen these patients. And the general response at that stage, the treatment modality was chair recovery. If you had a heart attack, you go sit in the chair and you do nothing, because you might trigger another one.
Ah.
And drink your pills and sit in the chair and be quiet. And that was that was to a large extent the treatment modality at that stage. So when he came, and he told me this story many times, when he went and talked to his these cardiologists, they said they will die like flies. You're stepping where angels fear to tread, and stay away from it. But he eventually got one cardiologist to get involved. He had to take his patients. He got six patients eventually, advertising in the newspaper. He put him in a van with a cyclogometer, and he went to this cardiologist in Johannesburg, which was about 150 kilometers from where they were. And they lined him up, and he tested them to look at their ECG response and their blood pressure responses and so forth. And this cardiologist was, he was stressed out of his mind. But eventually they got through all the tests, and went back home, put up his little clinic, and he started training them. 6 months later, they went back and for a retest with the cardiologist. And this guy could not believe what he was seeing. He basically were hitting the table with his fist and saying, Gert, we're going to rock the world to this. Oh. I cannot believe what you're doing here. And so at the same time, there was a guy in the USA called Kavanaugh. And he wrote a whole book about it, almost the same time. And he took a bunch of heart patients, people that had heart attacks, and he trained them for a marathon. And he actually had them complete a marathon. At that stage, that was Kavanaugh wasn't a cardiologist, so he was a very trained individual, knowing how to deal with medical. So he pushed these patients, and they eventually, more than 2/3 of them completed the marathon.
Did you say he was a cardiologist?
He was a cardiologist.
So he knew what he was doing. He was measuring all the way.
Yeah, he was measuring all the way. So they trained together as a group, and then they went, and I think it was the Boston Marathon or one of those marathons that these people completed.
That's so much courage.
So out of that, the two, in South Africa then, this whole idea, and his academic job then, our professor then started saying, okay, I'm going to make this part of the course.
And which course?
And this was a course in exercise science.
Right.
So he started putting this into one of the subjects in the exercise science degree, and he started training students, mostly on postgraduate levels. So... which then resulted in actually the undergraduate course actually being adjusted to actually prepare these students better for the postgraduate work that they're going to do.
So that was the man who initially set up the test. What was his name?
Gert. Gert's difficult to say in English. G-E-R-T. Comes out as Gert.
Okay. And so he went from... student with a clever idea, courage, through to professor, through to actually pretty much creating a whole new field.
Creating a new field. And then just once he started, we were then in a military situation in South Africa with a border war, or the Angola war. And so compulsory military service was part of our reality. And so what they started seeing with these young kids coming in for military training is that they have what they call TV legs. Television was becoming part of our lives, and kids were becoming softer. And they could not handle the military training anymore, the route marches, and they developed all sorts of tip-flips. It's a fracture of the tibia and the fibula. Due to walking with the military boots and so forth. And so in the military then, they started looking for specialists that can work with this. And the graduates from Professor Gert Strydom then became employed in the army as therapists.
Uh-huh.
And so this then created a whole new profession in South Africa. We also did a lot of stuff on... executive fitness, people that are in high stress jobs. So we set up a consultancy business from the university that I got involved quite a lot with my part of my job was to travel and to go to this, so the ASB bank, it's not really called ASB in South Africa, it's called Absa Bank. It's almost the same, but it's different. and they put up a gym in their head office in Johannesburg, and they had about, I think there was about 60, 70 executives that were training in the gym. And so I went there every month for 2 days, stayed there in a hotel, and then either assessed new people coming in or just going through helping people, seeing what they're doing, if they're still doing the right stuff. And so in their gym, so that one whole floor, the fifth floor, was actually converted into shower facilities, a sauna, a floor where they can do aerobic dancing sort of stuff, and other floor exercises, yoga, that sort of stuff. And then also the cycle ergometers and the resistance machines. And so I would go in there and work with them. The Diamond Mines in Kimberley did the same thing. And so I went 2 days, and first week I traveled to Johannesburg. Next week I'll be off to Kimberley and work with the people in the diamond, working in the diamond mines.
Was this in the 90s?
This was in the late 1980s, early 1990s.
Right.
Yeah.
And was it just the executives you were working with?
At that stage, it was just the executives. In America, the old concept of worksite health promotion is very big.
Mm.
And that's where this idea, actually, where we picked this idea up and sort of decided to just work with executive groups. Yeah. And we started it off by actually doing a research study with two car manufacturing, Toyota and Ford, was based to companies in South Africa where they actually design the motor vehicles. And we went in there and say, okay, we're going to use one as a control group and we're going to use another one as the experience group. And we want to see what's the effect on their stress levels and what's the effect on healthcare costs and productivity at work absenteeism and so forth. And we did a whole study on that and actually published it. And then use that information to actually approach other companies.
And what were the key findings?
The key findings, this is actually well published, not mm-hmm. only our research, there's a lot of actually research on it. And there's no doubt that it does make a significant difference in the health and the mental health, the physical health and mental health of people that. Because one of the things that you do when you stressed out is you look for crutches, and those crutches come in the form of smoking and drinking, and you know, you get home and you just want to feel better now, and you have your whiskey, and before you know it, this is a habit. You drink your whiskey every night,
and you're not going for a walk, and you're not mowing the lawns, and you're not doing anything.
Yeah. That's right, and so just getting and the feedback from the best results was the feedback from the people that we worked with. People that would say, you know, when I got a certain jobs, I would used to put it on the table and just avoid it because I could not mentally deal with making decisions, making these hard decisions, and just the monotony of actually working through all the documents. I would avoid it as long as I can. I said, now, doing this fitness training here, I actually walk in there and I'm looking forward to do it. This was the literal words that one of the clients said to me when we reassessed him. So actually looking forward to actually tackling this and dealing with it.
They've got vitality, they've got energy, they've got enthusiasm, which is going to go right across their whole life.
That's right, because that affects communication at home.
Yes.
If I get home and I'm tired and I'm stressed out and the wife complains about the dishwasher not working, then I lose my temper.
Mm.
Or I'm a lot more prone to use my temper or
mm-hmm.
look for that whiskey. And if you're fitter, then this creates a total different way that you deal with that broken wash machine or dishwasher.
So you would have seen profound changes that really reinforced what you believe, what you know.
Yeah.
You were watching it happen.
Yeah.
With a bunch of high thinking. They had a good reason to succeed.
Yes. Yeah. So we're talking about people in the higher echelon of academic achievement. Mm. So it's these are not people that are they go getters. They are normally people that will go out and be physically active and know the benefits of it. So they understood the benefits of it, but you get a new job and you get pulled mm-hmm. tight and there's work responsibility and you miss one exercise session, then you miss a second mm-hmm. one, and before you know it, you've missed 2 weeks. And then you start looking for your crutches. You smoke a little bit more, or you start drinking a little bit mm-hmm. after work. And before you know it, you're sort of in a hole that you can't get out of. And it becomes harder going then to a gym when you start gaining weight around your waist, you don't feel comfortable in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Those are a lot of little things that at play. And one of the things that people don't understand also, when you want to make exercise a habit, it impacts quite significantly on the rest of the family in many ways.
What?
Yeah, so there's a set time where you eat, mm-hmm. so whoever prepares the food has the food ready at a certain time. And if I make that my exercise time, then this is not going to work. So I need to factor that in.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a mother and I'm the one that actually prepares the food, and I now go exercise, which means when I get home, it impacts on the readiness of the food. Daddy is unhappy. You know, mm-hmm. or the kids is unhappy. And I've got teenagers, then they start, you know, getting real nasty. I often, when I assess people and we talk about when you're going to exercise, say, okay, when is a time that's not going to impact on the rest of the family?
That is so important if they're going to keep doing it.
Yes, yeah. And the rest of the family then needs to learn real quickly that this is mom or dad's exercise time. And we need to build whatever we want to do around that.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have expectations within that time for dad to take me to somewhere or mom to take me somewhere, because this is her time. And so that conversation is also important to have with the rest of the family. But so coming back to the executives, the fact that this now was offered at the job meant that people could actually go to the work an hour before they start, do their exercise, or do it in their lunch hour, or do it immediately after work. And most of these job providers were kosher with the idea that you take an hour of work time to exercise. If you're a little bit late in the morning, or you go to gym half an hour earlier before child time, before go home time, child, I say the word, before going home, then that's fine. You know, because what you're doing is actually impacting on your productivity. It's impacting on how you do your work.
And that completely solves that problem of how to fit it in with family, with everything else.
Yes.
because the work time is usually almost sacred.
Yeah.
Nobody asks for anything during that work time.
Yes, yeah.
And they can do it within that.
Yeah, within that space, yes.
We've done it again. Yeah. That's wonderful, thank you.
Okay.
I can see why you're so passionate about it. You've actually watched the evolution of this whole process.
Well, we saw it grow in South Africa. So in South Africa, after this initial years of the military, we actually constructed a registration framework, and that's been running for probably 40 years now already, 20 to 40 years, and it's well established, and there's hundreds of these clinical exercise physiologists. It's called biokineticists in South Africa. Biokineticists. Bios is life, and kinesis is movement.
Biokinesis.
So life through movement. That's where aura kinetics also come from. Aura is health, and kinetics is movement, is life through movement.
And you think of the impact this has had on hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, so in South Africa it's massive. Over here, I mean, just in New Zealand, between Sonia and myself, we've probably worked with 2,000 to 3,000 people.
Yes.
Easy, over the last 10 years, actually 15 years that we in practice.
And you can't measure the impact on other people.
Yeah.
That those people have affected just by being there.
Yeah, it affects the family, the rest of the family.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.